you need to deploy resources. You need to give your people what they need in order to be successful, no matter what that is, whether that's physical tools or knowledge or just, you know, emotional support. And then the last is achieve. You help people become their very best. And, you know, even if you have to drag them over the finish line, right, you remove barriers out of their way, you get them where they want to go. And that's really what leadership is all about.
Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come up with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. My audience, I love you all. Thank you very much. You guys honor me every single week. Every week you guys like, you share, you subscribe, and I appreciate every single piece of it. So thank you very much. This week, I have a great guest for you. Monty Peterson and I are going to talk about human-based leadership because it is so important. It's something that's near and dear to my heart. It's something that's near and dear to Monty's heart. So let's get into this. Monty, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ben. It's an honor to be here and really a pleasure to tackle this subject. Looking forward to it.
Monty, let's start off giving people a bit of a history because, you know, the world should know your name, but I'm sure there are people out there, the 7.5 billion people in the world, who don't. So let's get into this. Where did you come from? You know, how did you start your career? What brought you to leadership? And let's get into your philosophy of things.
Sure. I live in the U.S., Midwestern, you know, born and raised, love the Midwest and, you know, have been here. I mean, I've traveled around quite a bit, but my roots, I mean, that's where I live, the people, I mean, that's really important to me. So I had an extensive career in hospitality management. I worked for two global contract catering companies for 34 years between the two of them. They were, you know, they were competitors. And in 2016, that all ended and, you know, for various reasons, but it was a good thing. I mean, the business was becoming heavily commoditized. It just wasn't. My last 3 or 4 years were just really, really difficult. And I knew it was time to go. And it really took me all of about 2 weeks. Once I knew I was leaving, 2 weeks after that, I knew what I wanted to do. And that was really to go back and help people to not make the mistakes that I made as a leader. It's amazing, Ben, you get caught up in something and you do it for so long and you think that's the only way or the only thing, or you think that's how everybody else is doing it. And then you step outside of that and all of a sudden, you know, you open yourself up, you know, to the world and what's going on and you start reading and getting a little more intuitive about things. And you're like, you know, you have this negative highlight reel in your head, you know, where you're just constantly playing back all of the mistakes, you know, you made. And the good news in my case was, you know, I leveraged that into a business model. And that's when I formed my own business, the CDA group, which stands for clarify, deploy, and achieve, which to me are the three most important things that leaders do. You can never communicate expectations enough. You can never clarify objectives enough. You need to deploy resources. You need to give your people what they need in order to be successful, no matter what that is, whether that's physical tools or knowledge or just, you know, emotional support. And then the last is achieve. You help people become their very best. And, you know, even if you have to drag them over the finish line, right, you remove barriers out of their way, you get them where they want to go. And that's really what leadership is all about. The CDA group is a leadership and training firm that I formed. It'll be 5 years in August. And we're out there aligning the tasks, daily tasks and activities of everybody on a team with the strategic objectives of the organization. And, you know, we have a system and methodology that we use that, you know, really helps instill that discipline and makes people recognize, you know, what execution is and how it should be done.
I love it. Now, I'm a big believer of we're a culmination of the lessons that we learned and the experiences that we had. And I want to bring it back to the time before you got into CDA. And I think that that's important to draw the distinction of what got you out of one industry and into the other. What were the biggest challenges and what did you learn from them through your time in the hospitality industry? Because that's a dynamic amount of time. And there's, and especially dealing with it on a global level. What did you find that the biggest challenges that were leading to the commoditization? And what did that mean in terms of how you were viewing leadership?
Yeah, it's interesting. The business itself was very exciting. I mean, there was never a dull moment. And the reason I loved it and did it every day, got up and did it every day, was because I never did the same thing on any given day. And, it was just, everybody eats and, likes enjoying themselves. And so being around that's, just sort of intoxicating. But what happened is that what grew out of, what I would call the best kept secret, because a lot of people work in hotel and restaurant management. And my side of it was kind of in the institutional side. So I worked in colleges and universities, businesses, healthcare. That's a side of it that's a little bit more controlled. And so it didn't quite have the ups and downs that people experience. I mean, if you're working in a restaurant or a hotel, you're probably working nights, weekends, and holidays. If you're in the institutional sector, you're pretty much Monday through Friday, because you're feeding people in large numbers in various institutions. But it didn't make it any less stressful. But anyway, so what led to the commoditization of the business is just people building companies and jumping into it. And, there became three large global competitors, one out of the UK, one out of France, and then one Philadelphia based here in the States. And we just ate each other's lunch. It just got to be, where it was just this constant one-upmanship. And the problem that it had for me from a leadership level was that ate away at all the margins. And so my ability as a manager was required less and less, because we needed people from above me telling us what we had to do in order to make the margins. You had to cut this, you had to cut that. You couldn't do it this way. You had to use this resource. There was no freedom scale in managing anymore. And so, just to remain competitive, we were constantly trading customers. It got to the point where you could almost sign a contract over the weekend. I could sign it on a Friday and you could be operating in place of the other company on a Monday. That's how commoditized it got. And So not a very enjoyable time from a leadership level, because you were forced into situations that you just weren't comfortable doing, and that you just never felt right about it. You did it because that's what the organization wanted you to do, but you couldn't feel good about it. And I just saw a lot of people who had committed a lot of blood, sweat, and tears over the years and really enjoyed what they did. And then all of a sudden, because they were tied to an organization that had a contract, they were forced to, to go out and get another job, join another company, transfer to another location. So just a lot of upset and just difference, different change. And that was tough to take.
So how do you deal with that? I mean, when you're dealing with the regular restaurant situation, there's a lot of chaos that goes in that. People work crazy hours. They work, from early in the morning to late at night. They may finish a late night shift and then have to take a noon the next day. But on the institutional side, it's a little bit more, as you said, it's a little bit more level playing field. But with that, with the commoditization, it must lead to a period where employees lose a sense of empowerment. They don't have the ability to create their own destiny. When I was a waiter, back in the 1980s, the amount of money that I made as a waiter, my salary was insignificant. It was all about tips. It was all about, the relationship to customers. People asked for my table by name, et cetera, et cetera. When you're dealing with institutional, you're dealing with, with unions and process and procedures and, trying to get, 1,000 meals out at the same time. How is a leader... are you able to either motivate or empower or communicate effectively to be able to give those people the incentive to be, the best that they can do and to be able to, reflect the quality of the brand when the brand is constantly being driven down by, price considerations?
Yeah, it was largely all a function of budget. because if you had the reserve or the training dollars allocated, you could really, the sky's the limit. And again, some of that was, you know, was related to who the account was with and just how, you know, how are your margins and how is your, you know, budgeting. I mean, those types of contracts tended to draw really talented people because, you know, right, the word would get out. People would say, well, you want to work here because it's a great place. They, you know, they invest in their employees and this is a program that they believe is really beneficial. And, you know, it's important, you know, to them to attract people, you know, with the dining program or, you know, catering or whatever. And so people would flock to those locations and you could do anything. I mean, I ran a worldwide training center for one of the, at the time, Big Six accounting firms. And you'd be amazed at the money we had to do training. I mean, we were out in the parking lot with fire extinguishers training people how to put out grease fires. I mean, you know, we could do just about anything we wanted. And that was all great. And God, people loved it there. And, you know, you could get it to the level you wanted. So, you know, take the antithesis of that where, you know, money's tight. They're only paying you so much, you know, to do certain things. They still want everything done as first class as possible. You know, you're really stressed. You're doing it with less people. You're trying to get the best culinary talent in there to, you know, give them a great meal with at the best price possible. And so, yeah, it's just two sides of the spectrum, but neither end is really, really, really great. I mean, over time you get spoiled and somebody comes along and says, no, you know, we've got to cut back. And then on the other side, you never get to that point where you can even, you know, do a great job. You can do a good job, but you can't do a great job.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. Let's macro this. Let's take this out of the hospitality industry and take it into the world in general. And let's really focus in on human-based leadership, because what we've been talking about is the fact is that trained, you know, effective, empowered employees are better employees. And they're far more willing to work harder for an organization than people that are stressed, you know, that they're under constant pressure when they don't feel valued, etc. So my question to you is, how do we get there within organizations? How do we get, you know, CFOs and CEOs who are constantly looking at budgets and constantly looking and saying, where can I cut, to realize the value of their people and that they are the true, you know, true asset of their brand?
Yes, it's all about making the people the argument, you know, keeping the people in the forefront of the conversation and saying, this is what this is all about. You know, we impact the business by how we impact the lives of those who work for us. And that in my book is what, you know, truly human leadership is all about. At the point where you recognize that when you invest in the people, they do all the things you shared, right? You know, they're committed, they're loyal, they're going to go over and above, they're going to care about other people, they're going to care about your customers. And there's a tremendous ROI related to that. That's the part that most senior leaders don't have faith in. They can't see it, right? They're under the pressure of quarterly results and, you know, short-term needs. And so that's where their focus, that's where their management style goes. So you've got to take it, you know, culturally and operationally to a level where people are looking at the long-term viability and sustainability of the organization as the true measure of success. So it's that combination of, you know, focusing on your people, giving them what they need to succeed, and then watching, you know, what happens over the long term, you know, when you do that well. You know, right now, and I'm probably certain you're probably familiar with Bob Chapman and Barry Waymiller Corporation, Everybody Matters, that book.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, Bob Chapman says it so succinctly. He says, we think of people as objects and functions to, you know, organizational success. And really what we need to think about it the other way around, you know, that our people, you know, are what's critical to, you know, to our success. And that's the big mistake, I think, that senior leaders make.
So where do we start? Let's get into this in terms of where do we start, because it really does start from culture and purpose and leadership. How do we get senior leaders who have either a lifestyle business or a small to medium-sized business, and they've been very micromanaging, they've been very, you know, autocratic in terms of their leadership style. You know, to them, it's either do it my way or go away. How do we get people beyond that point and get them to understand that, first of all, there is a different way of doing things, and what the benefit of doing things in a human-based leadership matter benefits their company?
Yeah, it's a big question, because there are a lot of autocratic leaders that are just so far down a path, they can't see their way, you know, to doing something new. And I guess I'm not saying that it's impossible, but most people need to have some kind of a trigger experience, right? Something needs to happen to them personally that gets them, you know, looking at something differently, or saying, you know, this is the way, you know, that it should be. And again, if I can reference Bob Chapman again, I mean, he was at a wedding, right? When he realized that, you know, somebody was giving up their daughter to this man, you know, to be married. And he goes, this is the way we should be as leaders and as employers, you know, that we have all these people that are somebody's precious child. And once they're given to us, you know, we have a responsibility to them to do the best we can for them, because somebody's entrusted us with that. And that's, I know that's a reach for a lot of people, Ben. It's just something that they can't see, because they've, you know, they've done things their way for such a long, long time. So, you know, short of getting those people, you know, to read more, get out of their fixed mindset, right? Get more into a learning or growth mindset, and think about other ways to, you know, to operate the business. That's about the only way that I can see it happening. And the people that I do business with are kind of already there. So I've not encountered a situation where I've tried to just pull somebody. In fact, if I got somebody like that, Ben, I'd probably run as far as I could the other way, thinking that my chances of success, you know, might not be so good. But yeah, it's a great question. But obviously I'm very excited about technology and, you know, what social media and platforms like LinkedIn have done for, you know, for leaders like that, because all of a sudden it's hard to not be exposed to it, right? Because you've got podcasts, you've got, you know, more and more books, we're taking our information in bytes, but, you know, we get that across our phone now. So there's ways and you know, but it really is either a revolution starts with the people, or somebody close to them confides in them and comes to them and says, you know, we need to have a come to Jesus meeting here, because things just aren't working the way they should be.
You said something very interesting. I mean, the social media and media in general today is a huge equalizer, you know, because there is that huge dichotomy of opinions at your fingertips. And it's amazing to me, and I see it all the time, that a lot of senior managers are lurkers on social media. They tend not to be involved. They don't like, they don't tweet, they don't comment, but they're there and they listen. And they tend to gather an enormous amount of information that enable them to see what's coming next, what's happening. And I think that is really promising in the world today, is to be able to sit there and say, look, I can gather opinions from a variety of different points. I may agree with some, I may not agree with others, but if I'm willing to listen and I'm willing to sit there and say, hey, wait a second, just because I disagree with this person doesn't mean that they're wrong. It just means that I have a contrary viewpoint. And I think that is a really big factor that is probably leading to, you know, management styles changing over the years. We talked off air about carrot and stick and, you know, the incentive-based program and, you know, being very autocratic. And I see that that's changing, and I'm hopeful that that's changing. Do you think that, you know, and we can get into this. Do you think that COVID is really going to be a game changer in terms of being, as you said, looking for that line in the sand that changed people's mind that enable them to become far more human in their leadership style?
I don't know if I'd go so far as to say it's going to be a game changer, but I can see where it's going to impact a lot of people, because all of a sudden, you know, whether these leaders recognize the personal lives of their people or not, they were forced into it as a result of COVID, right? I mean, all of a sudden, you know, they were doing the Zoom meetings with them at home. They were understanding, you know, they had their kids with them probably because they're homeschooling or Zoom schooling. And all of a sudden they had to take into consideration their people. So, you know, I was reading a Harvard Business Review article from a week ago or so where they were talking about trends as a result of COVID. And the number one trend was that leaders were going to be forced to move from, you know, employee engagement to life experience understanding, and that, you know, leaders would change as a result of that. So I hope it has some impact. I hope it's not short term, but I think it's going to change some minds. There's no question about it. You can't have not gone through what we're all going through right now and had some kind of, you know, continued lack of consideration for, you know, for human interest and benefit.
The word that's coming to mind to me is empathy. You know, is people are becoming far more empathetic, or hopefully becoming far more empathetic. I mean, there's stories of CEOs taking their Zoom calls from their car in their driveway because they've got three kids running around the house, and, you know, it's bedlam inside the house, and they don't feel that they can be professional, you know, in a meeting situation, because there's nowhere quiet in the house for them to do. And if they're having those same challenges, maybe they're thinking about their employees in that same situation. Do their employees have the tools that they need to succeed? Especially as we're going to reach a situation where there's going to be more and more employees working from home. You know, maybe a lot of people will come back, but there is going to be a lot of people that are going to stay remote. And I think that we need to be thinking about, as leaders, how do we make our people successful? What do we do when we wake up every morning to make sure that the people that within our charge are successful and have the tools that they need to succeed? So my question is, when you're working with your leaders, when you're working with people and you say that they've already crossed the chasm, they already realize, they already have, you know, some degree of empathy, they already have some degree of wanting to help their clients, their employees, how do you help them get better? How do you help them build systems and processes and purpose to be able to enable their people to succeed and be empowered?
It really comes down to just, you know, getting them to care. And a lot of them do care. They just don't understand the extent to which they need to care. The systems that I use in my business are really around trying to get the dialogue going, make sure that there's, you know, continuous two-way feedback at a minimum between a manager and a direct report. Again, the system that I use, you know, kind of contributes to that. But if you're going to build trust and respect inside of an organization, you've got to have people talking to each other. And what I've found is if you start with the cultural elements and you reinforce those annually, meaning you just don't set up your mission, vision, strategic initiatives, you live them. I mean, every 30 days you're having a conversation about, you know, about what are the core behaviors that you know, we need to have as a team in order to be successful. You know, if you're not talking about those things, if you're not keeping them top of mind, then, you know, a default culture forms, right? You just get people doing what they want to do. And, you know, to the bounds that leadership tolerates it, that all gets accepted. And so it really is just instilling a discipline in people around, you know, making sure that they're talking to each other, making sure that they are practicing empathy, making sure that they do understand, you know, how what they're doing on a daily basis ties back to the, you know, mission and vision of the organization. If you don't do those things, you've just got people that are filling a role and they feel it, and, you know, they're not going to go out of their way. But, you know, if you can get them, you know, if you can get them fired up about it, if you can get them listening and talking to each other and understanding that, hey, I felt the same way you did, you know, about that issue, people, you know, they'll let their guard down and they'll, they'll give you, you know, they'll give you everything they've got, and you'll be able to do the things you want to do. It's just one of those things that until you see it and experience it, it's really hard to envision.
Yeah, I find the hardest part of communication is listening. Yeah, you know, we all communicate to people, not with people. And that's a challenge. We speak to people, we don't speak with people. And we need to speak with people. We need to be able to not only talk to people, but understand, did they understand what we were saying? You know, do they understand what it means to them? Do they understand what the impact has? And do they understand what their next steps need to be in order for everyone to succeed? And that's a challenging thing. That's an extremely challenging thing. So how do you find leaders, you know, because this is something that everybody struggles with. How do you find you can help leaders learn the skills needed to be able to have those two-way conversations that be able to empower people to be better?
Well, it's all about being present. But, you know, as you shared, it's difficult for all of us. I mean, even in my head, and I walk out there thinking the best of people and trying to be attentive to what it is that's being said. But, you know, you have clutter, right? You always have other things going on around you. And it's just so difficult. But really what I try and share with leaders is just, you know, you've got to be there in the moment, you know, for your people. And not only do you have to exhibit it in the one-on-ones that you have with people, but you've got to model it throughout the day in terms of your behaviors, you know, and what you're doing. And when people see that, then, you know, they go, hey, the boss is doing this. I mean, this, you know, it must be okay. But yeah, it's definitely one of those things. It's a challenge. I like to, as I work with organizations, one of the artifacts of the system that I use is that we get, we get control, right? You get control of the organization. When you execute well, you have a discipline, things tend to get better, and that allows you time. And I try to encourage my leaders to take that time to look at other things that will increase the sustainability of the organization. So I do a lot of leadership skills training and social emotional learning around that. And again, you know, that gives you the opportunity to teach, you know, self-awareness, empathic learning, relationship management, you know, those things that are, you know, so critical to just being a good person. And what I mean by that is just being more kind, being more understanding, being more open. You know, it is that empathy piece, right? It's just, you know, looking at how how people see you and looking inward first versus, you know, pointing fingers and blaming. So I think the answer is that's a long-winded way of saying there's a lot of things that you can do. It's just everybody's different, and you've kind of got to go with those people and look at their past behaviors. And, you know, again, if you can get them thinking in the moment and be present, that's as good a place as any to start.
One last question that comes from a conversation you and I had off air, and we were talking about ego. We were talking about leadership is a mindset, not a job title. It's about them. It's not about you. And how do we move a group of people that have been trained to believe that they are the center, that, you know, I'm the boss. You know, I'm the boss. I'm the person who's in charge. I should know everything. I should be the one that people are coming to me, and it's my responsibility to realize that it's more about the team and making sure that the team succeeds. How do you help people? And this is really important. How do you help them create that mindset shift? Because to me, that really puts everything in a ball about everything that we've talked about.
We spoke, Ben, in the pre-conversation a little bit about, you know, John Maxwell, and I like how he positions it that, you know, if ego is really a problem for you, you have to understand that if you lead from the inside first, the longer you do it and the better you get at it, the more greater you will be on the outside. Basically, you know, what he means by that is obviously if you lead with the heart and the mind and take care of your people and do extraordinary things for them, then they're going to come back and they're going to shine your star. And, you know, you're going to have not only a better reputation, brand image, you know, quality of life, successful business. I mean, you're going to have all those things and probably more things than your ego could possibly hold, you know, if you do it the right way. So I like that angle, you know, where, you know, you've got to take people and say, you've got to value people over position. You know, all the great leaders look at things, you know, from a different perspective. They, you know, they're not afraid to apologize for their mistakes. They inspire people. You know, they're willing to do whatever it takes to help them be their best selves. I don't know. I mean, when I do those things, even on a small level for people, my ego, my adrenaline, my dopamine, right? I get that push anyway. So you can imagine what it's like. What if you have 7,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 employees? You know, you instill that kind of a leadership model in your ego, it's going to have a hard time being contained in a Canadian province, right?
And those provinces are pretty big.
I know, they're very big.
Monty, I've loved the conversation. I want to thank you. We'll make sure everybody knows how to get in touch with you and the CDA group and everything within the show notes. Everything will be sitting there waiting for you. But I have one last question I ask everybody when they leave my show. So when you leave a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
Probably that I added some value, that, you know, the time you spent with me was worth it, and that it made some level of contribution on your life, however small. You know, what you don't like is, you know, pulling away, having regrets about what you said or how you did something, or that, you know, you put people to sleep, or, you know, whatever the case was. I mean, and most people are, you know, congenial and very, very polite. So you don't always get that. But yeah, just for the time that we had together, albeit a wink of an eye, it was worth something on some level to them.
Well, Monty, I found this conversation extremely impactful. So thank you for being such an amazing guest. And thanks for sharing your insights with my audience.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for what you do, and, you know, continued success.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?